In association with AnnaValleyShook.com, it's the Ghost Show, your original LSU podcast, coming to you on a Thursday night. It's October 30th for Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody. Talking a little LSU football. Two-thirds of the way into the season. With me tonight, Miss Millie Miller from ATVS. What's up, Billy?
What's up, Carrie?
Nothing. Carrie Munch, your host, podcast behind the scenes, pushing buttons. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can visit the site, www.annavalleyshook.com. Download us to your smartphone device via iTunes for free. And also, you can hit us up on Twitter at our various accounts. You can tweet at the show, at Valley Shook. Tweet at me at Ghost Show Carrie, GEAUXSHOWCARRY. And then Billy is at ATVS_ChefBilly. Well, we are a week late to talk about the Ole Miss debacle, but here, nevertheless, you're stuck with us ranting and raving about that damn game for the next 35 to 40 minutes, however long we decide to stay on. Of course, we have the bye week this week. So, good opportunity for us to, you know, look at ones. Of course, we played Furman, too. We can't forget about that. I guess it's easy to forget about that because I didn't go to the game.
I'd rather talk about that than Ole Miss, shit.
You're right. So, I'm completely overthrown. I'm completely forgetting we played Furman. I'm sitting there thinking, wait a second. We didn't play Ole Miss this past weekend. We didn't have two bye weeks in a row either. So anyway, LSU wins. LSU beats Furman 48-16. And what was, I don't know. You got to fill me in a little bit, Billy, because I was under the impression that the kickoff was at 7 o'clock. So I stayed out to the tailgate. I had no intention of going to the game on Saturday. I went, had a Halloween party to go to. So I stayed out to the tailgate to what I thought was kickoff, which was, I thought, 7. And I got in a car and proceeded to drive home. And me and Mr. Joseph Labatt got to talking. And I said, oh, crap, it's 7:40. Let me check on the game. And it's 20-16 at halftime. And I'm like, what the hell? Yeah. But apparently it was a pick six, another muff punt that gave Furman a short field. But in the second half, by all accounts, I think we held Furman to like, 50 yards of offense in the second half, something like that, 50, 60 yards. And threw
even
up.
Even less than that.
Even, yeah, maybe it was 44. I can't remember. But and scored four touchdowns. We 647 yards of offense, I think. Terrence McGee had 100 yards rushing basically in a quarter and a half. Offense was still – offense got to clicking a little bit. But, some things I'm a little worried about Mettenberger's sudden propensity to throw interceptions nowadays. He's hit 5 in the last 2 games now, and something that really needs to get corrected before we head to Tuscaloosa there. Billy, what do you think?
The ones on versus Ole Miss, I think, were more problematic because it was a case of him doing something that he's tended to do a bit this year, and that stare receiver down, and give the safety an easy chance to jump it. The two ones versus Furman, one was not his fault at all. He got kind of knocked from behind as the ball came out, and it went, and it was kind of tipped right to a linebacker. The other one, it would look like he and the wide receiver had were on the different page. I guess he must have called an audible or something, and the wide receiver heard something different, and he ran one route, and Mettenberger threw another, and the defensive back was right there. And the Furman game was one of those games where if it's 48-0 and then they tack on 16 points, no one cares. But they got their points early on that pick six and that muff punt, and made it look like it was really close for about a half. It really wasn't. They were never really in a threat of taking the lead or winning the game or anything like that. But and then LSU did what you would have expected them to do in the second half, and I don't have an extreme reaction to it one way or the other. I think a lot of people were still pissed off about Ole Miss, and I don't blame them. But a week later is a week later, and the Furman game is the Furman game, and this team is to the bye week, and now can just nothing else matters. Now just get ready for the next 3 games. You beat Alabama, and it's a new season. You got a shot. You need some help, but you still got right.
Still have an outside shot
to Atlanta. and you still got a lot to play for. You know what? 10-2 is still a good record. You know, maybe you're not in the national championship discussion. Well, guess what? You're not in the national championship discussion every year, and still plenty of things to play for. Still a chance to make this a good season. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I expect them to come out ready to play next week. It's Alabama week. They always, you know, every Les Miles team has played Alabama tight,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the Saban era. They've never, even when it looked like this is not even going to be a close game, they've managed to at least keep it within, you know, single-digit points. So right. I expect it to be a close game, and I expect LSU to have a shot to win it.
Yeah, just
whether
to piggyback.
Whether they will or not, that's a different question, but
right,
they'll have a shot.
Yeah, without question. Just to piggyback off what you were saying, no, I don't think any reasonable LSU fan, president company included on that one, nobody really thought we were going to contend for a national title. But the way the offense was looking and the way we've known John Chavis to be a really good defensive coordinator would be able to fix some of the issues we were having on defense – the way that offense was clicking, we thought that there was, you know, an outside shot. I mean, even with the loss to Georgia, even with the amount of undefeated major college teams that are still out there, you still figure.
Oh, you certainly had a shot before.
Yeah, if you won loss and you're going to Alabama, you beat Alabama, and you win out, and you're 11-1 in the SEC championship game. Who knows what happens to those other teams as the season goes on? But at least you know you have a shot. Now, if you lost to Ole Miss. You know, you come out, and I think you saw, I don't know, it was kind of weird, just to go back on the Ole Miss game for a second. I kind of felt as if the same, I kind of made this comparison to a couple of people. I might even tweet it, but I felt the same way Les Miles in 2009 tried to protect the quarterbacks by running the ball constantly. He was doing the same thing with the defense. By being kind of conservative a little bit with the play call. And even going back to Florida, even though that was the right game plan to go ahead and beat Florida, Ole Miss, I kind of saw some of that early on in the first half. And maybe that's why Mettenberger was kind of pressing and trying to complete those deep passes because of he thought maybe he needed to try to make some plays because they wasn't running the ball as successfully as they should have been early on against Ole Miss. And granted, if you go back and look at the stats and you take away the sacks, I think we averaged like 4.5 yards a carry. So we actually did have some success running the ball against Ole Miss, but you can't – it's hard to overcome 3 first-half turnovers and spotting a team, you know, in their home stadium 17 points and going down 17-0 and getting off the field on third down. I mean, that was where that game was lost. It was the 3 first-half turnovers and, you know, you come back and you tie the game and you got Ole Miss a 3rd-and-15 and you can't get off the field. I mean, that's just a recipe for disaster, and that's just
yeah.
It was frustrating, and that was. And I don't even want to get into the timeout thing, or the lack of him calling a timeout. Yeah,
the game was lost by that point anyway.
And his reasoning for it, I don't even want to hear that anymore. Because trust me, I was hot about that. But
well, you know, let me disagree with you on the offense. I don't think the problem was that the offense was too conservative at times. I think they were too hell bent on let's make the big play and you know, go for it all. You know, if you give Jeremy Hill and Kenny Hayward 20 carries each in that game, you might not win it going away, but you probably win that game 24-17 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, Ole Miss never really stopped the run consistently all night. I think at times LSU got a little too over aggressive and tried to take shots when they didn't really need to, and that was what resulted in the interceptions. And to be honest, you know, I don't care if you've got a really good defense. You go on the road, you don't score any points for a whole half, turn the ball over 3 times and spot the other team a 17-point lead, you're going to lose. If you've got a good defense, you're going to lose.
Right.
You know, people tried to put that game on the defense. And, you know, not that LSU's defense is good, but the LSU's defense is what it is at this point. You know,
right.
it's kind of like been watching the Saints recently. When the Saints have a game – where they hold a team to 20 points or 17 points in recent years, not this year, obviously. But, you know, they would have the game. I remember they lost in Atlanta, I think, last year, and they held Atlanta to 20 points. And Drew Brees threw 5 picks and couldn't score 20. It's like, this is who you are. This is your identity. When your defense is doing the best that it can and keeping that team from scoring every time they touch the ball, you have to go out and get points. And the offense didn't hold up their end of the bargain.
No, they didn't. and that's what me and Dan talked about that week leading up to that game was about, you know, we'd be pretty satisfied if, you know, we expected Ole Miss to probably score about 20, 24 points in the game, which they did score 27. But, you know, it was a matter – and we don't turn the ball over three times in the first half. We're probably at 35 or 40 for that game. You know, we're not playing from behind in the second half. And
that's the thing. When your defense is like this – like, I mean, I was there. I was in Oxford. And, you know, when LSU came out to start the first half, all I remember thinking was – You got to get points here because you've done your defense has held them in check as best it can. It's not going to be able to keep holding them like this. Correct. This is the defense you have. You know,
and I think
you can just say, well, the defense should just hold them, and it's like, well, you know, that's that like asking, you know, a monkey to start walking upright. It's not going to just happen just because you say it. You know.
Yeah, and the last thing you can do, especially with a team like Ole Miss that was on the brink, had lost three in a row. Six defensive starters out. The whole everything set up so well for LSU because she had Furman the week after, then a bye week. This game wasn't sandwiched at all, and I just thought it was just a lack of preparation, a lack of focus on the game, on the task at hand. And that's a recipe for disaster. And the last thing you want to do, and I say it every week, is just when you got a team like that you're playing, the last thing you want to do is give them hope. You want to jump on a team like that early, and you know, and as soon as we started committing turnovers, everybody kind of okay, here we go. It's another LSU Ole Miss. It's going to be a struggle, and
yep.
You know, kudos to the offense for coming back in the second half and making.
They did the best they could, but
right. I mean, making up for their mistakes, and then you know, like you said, you can't expect the defense to. Like you said, the defense is all what they are. You just like to see them, you know, get off the. I mean, they do such good jobs on first and second downs at times. They give up too many third longs, and that's they just. I'm not expecting
the amazing thing
always...
against Ole Miss was the number of times that they had Bo Wallace dead to rights and just didn't make the tackle.
Right,
you know, they would get him by his foot and he would get free and scramble for a first down. You know, the times when you were just in position and didn't do it. You know, and it's one of the weirdest phenomenons of the last Miles tenure is. You know, it's always Ole Miss that when this team has just that no-show, like, yeah, okay, well, they didn't show up, take this game seriously, it is always Ole Miss. You'd think by now it would have been State or it would have been Arkansas sometime. But you know, almost every year we wind up in a dogfight with Ole Miss because this game is their Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, if they can only win one game a year, they would be perfectly happy if it was LSU.
Right.
And for whatever reason – you know, Miles has been unable to convince that of the players. And I know it's not that he's not trying. I know he's just saying, whatever, this is Ole Miss. You know, and the players by now, you would think they would know it. This is a dogfight for us. Literally, I mean, with the exception of 2011, when they were playing out the string for Houston Nutt, you know, they are always ready to play. They will always play their backsides off and and make LSU work for this game.
Yeah, without question. And I guess in a way now, I mean, we're a little bit more, you know, in the mix and, you know, always in a hunt for SEC and national titles when we play Bama. We're kind of that to Alabama, you know, even in our poor years. I mean, last year, I mean, Alabama was at a point where they were close to running us off the field. And we came back in the second half and made that thing a freaking dogfight for them. And I'm sure and it showed the next week when they lost A&M, you know, We gave them everything we had, and it showed from Alabama's standpoint against A&M the following week, and it showed throughout the rest of the season because we didn't show up throughout the season last season. You know, and that's what I'm afraid of. That's what I'm afraid of next weekend. And no matter what happens, what the outcome is, how does LSU move forward after Alabama, whether it's a win or a loss? You know, because I mean, I'm kind of thankful. You know, we have that bye week after, as well because. You know, it gives us a chance to kind of regroup and refocus no matter if we win or we lose. And I agree with you. We still have a very good chance to win that football game. Whether or not, like you said, whether or not it's going to happen, I don't know. But, you know, we can move the ball on offense. They've shown, you know, not recently, but they've shown in the past that they're a little bit vulnerable to the pass. They don't, you know, the offensive line, you know, they've early on, they showed that, you know, they're a little bit vulnerable. Now, whether or not we can get a pass rush from McCown, we can't let McCown sit back in the pocket the whole game. Yeah. And we'll talk about this game more in depth next week, too. But
The Bama team that I've seen on tapes thus far and the little bit I've looked is not – I would say they're not as good as they've been the last couple of years. They've just played, you know – LSU would be undefeated against their schedule too. Maybe with the exception of A&M, you know, right. They have not played anybody that's real. I mean, three offenses on their schedule are all ranked in the triple digits. Like they're not even in the top 100. So they're not, you know, I don't think they're as good as what they've been. And, you know, defenses across the league are down.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think Florida and Alabama are the only two defenses holding teams under 300 yards a game, and they're still allowing, you know, a 3 or 4 year high in terms of yards per play. So, you know, this defense is doing well and still not doing as well as Alabama defenses have done the last couple of years. So what does that say about the SEC in general this year? You know,
right.
It's an offensive league. For the first time in a long time.
Right. Well, you've got six NFL quarterbacks playing football in SEC schools right now. I mean, so five.
And then you still have the Heisman Trophy winner.
Right. Yeah. Well, I kind of included him too. I mean, although I don't think he ever will pan out in the NFL, but you know, in today's NFL, he's going to get a look. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what kind of game plan we have. You know, part of me wouldn't mind seeing another shootout. You know, if we get Alabama kind of in a shootout kind of mode, you know, can we outscore?
Certainly fun.
You know, yeah, I think
you can't
say
the Georgia game wasn't fun. I mean, you hated losing it.
Oh, you're right about that. You know, there's no question.
Dang if it wasn't a great game.
No, I mean that was a, you know, that was a range of emotions, you know, all over the place. I mean, but to watch our offense to be able to score like they did and to answer every call Georgia had, you know, that's something that I kind of. You know, we haven't seen – I guess we just haven't had a game of that magnitude since. You know, we saw the offense just explode in the second half against Mississippi State. Then we saw the game plan against Florida was more of a subdued punch them in the mouth kind of a game. Then we saw, you know, three first-half turnovers. We don't turn the ball over three times in the first half. We probably still end up – we probably end up with 40 points again. So we just haven't seen the LSU offense play at the level that it did against Georgia in a long time just because of – You know, I mean, I guess Mississippi State too. It's been kind of a lull, you know, since that Mississippi State game as far as the offense goes. But they're still producing, and they showed that against Furman on Saturday. So,
Well, in Florida was one of those games where you moved the ball well, and like you had that crazy fumble Bettenberger had, and then you know, Florida, I think, Georgia, the Florida game for LSU was underrated as an offensive game because whenever they needed points, they went out and got points. You know, they needed a touchdown, they went in and got, you know, Florida kicked the field goal. Next drive, LSU goes right down the field and scores a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, then two dives later, they get another touchdown. Florida gets a field goal and looks like they've got some momentum, and LSU immediately goes down the field and gets another field goal, and at that point you could see they kicked that field goal. They went up, 17-6?
So, yeah.
And right. Florida sideline looked like, oh, well, 11 points. Well, we can't score 11 points.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. That's the ball game. Even though there was, I want to say 6 or 7 minutes left in that game, you know, which you would say is enough time, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the way Florida's offense was working. Yeah. That was, it was a game so mirrored, you know, the game in Gainesville last year, as far as you just kind of knew Florida wasn't scoring points. Just like we kind of knew, you know, Florida might as well have been up 35-0 last year because we wasn't scoring points in that game last year. It was just we couldn't do anything, you know, as far as throwing a football and running a football or anything. You know, so heading into bye week, I mean, what is there anybody that's been kind of nicked up, is kind of thinking that this bye week's going to come in handy for them and to be back
well,
and ready
J.C. for balance. Copeland's for the first
That's right,
guy.
Copeland. That's right.
I imagine a lot of them. I don't think Mettenberger is 100% healthy. I think he's healthy enough to play, but, you know, I think whatever that leg injury he's been battling since Florida, I think that's probably something that could benefit from some rest. You know, you don't know how many guys are dealing with something that they can totally play through, but it's slowing them down. Maybe Anthony Johnson's shoulder. I don't know. Trying to think of who else. Jarvis Landry's ankle, I know, was bothering him. I don't know if it's still bothering him or not, but I'm sure a week off ain't gonna hurt him. You know,
definitely. Yeah,
that's probably a good thing. And it's a chance to decompress. You know, 9 games in a row is a long way.
It is.
That's a long stretch of football.
You definitely have that with bye week here, game, and another bye week. So,
I almost wonder if they had to do it over again, if LSU would have maybe pushed to have a bye week a little sooner instead of having bye week Bama, bye week A&M. And I mean, a lot of teams try to get their bye weeks before their toughest games, but when your toughest games are back to back like that.
Yeah, perhaps a bye week against Ole Miss, you know, considering the fact that, you know, I don't know how the schedule would have played out after that, but say you had a bye week and then something else, and then Furman was, you know, say, for instance, this weekend and not the weekend before, and you have Furman right before Alabama. It's just as good as a bye week. So, but, you know, schedule is what it is. You gotta show up and play. So,
You can just play it and make the best of it.
Yeah. So, you know, Victorino just hit a 3-run double. So that's awesome.
Yep. Saw that. Cincinnati and Memphis are tied at 7.
All right. So is that the AC? Is that what conference they're in? Or is that start next year? Is that official this year?
I think it's official, but I always get back and forth. Are we calling them the AC or is the ACC the AC? Is it the AAC or the ACC that you want to call the AC? I don't know. I think everybody's got their own definition of it.
Yeah, right. The best line I heard all over the summer. I guess it was over the summer. When that conference when that AAC formed, Charlie Hennigriff said he named all the teams. And he said, "I got a perfect name for this conference." This was before it was named, and he says, "I got the perfect name for this conference." And you know, Odd and Penamsky. What's that? The Metro. It's basically the old Metro Conference minus Tulane in Florida State. I think it's like Cincinnati, Memphis, and all those schools. So, a throwback there. All right. So, Pocket, are we going to pick games this week anyway? Or what are we going to do? You even listening, Pocket?
Yeah, we're picking games this week.
All right. You might have to pull them up because I'm Skyping from my phone.
All right.
I can bring them up.
You want to call out just call out a few and we'll.
I'll warn you that the schedule is kind of light. I mean, there are some like really big games, but the schedule is kind of light otherwise. So I'm just warning you now that there are 2 Service Academy games this week, and Tulane's game, and UL playing an independent who isn't Notre Dame. Yeah, it's not our best week for picks, but you know, I went 1 in 10 last week, so I don't care anymore.
Hey, no matter if they're favorite or the
you all can enjoy my pain.
It doesn't matter if they're favorite or the dog. Take Tulane and a point.
Well, yeah,
I stopped being dumb with that. I wasn't picking Tulane on principle. Then I wised up and said, this is not for principalities aren't involved here. This is for records and bragging rights and.
You know, the line on that game is so interesting right now because Florida Atlantic, who is 2-6, mind you, and scheduled Tulane probably, you know, thinking otherwise as their homecoming game, somehow 2-6 Florida Atlantic, who is a very bad team, was still a 4-point favorite at home over a 6-2 Tulane team who, you know, and trust me, I didn't want to, but I spent some time looking at conference they're in statistics, which Tulane's got the best defense in their conference and their offense is pretty good even with that Montana kid hurt. And so Tulane's a really good, you know, really good for them, for that conference team who should, you know, handle Florida Atlantic all right, but somehow they're still not favored. And oh yeah, Bo Pelini and their Carl Pelini,
Carl Pelini
and the defensive coordinator just got fired. So FAU is is coaching without a team without a head
so
coach.
So I would take Tulane points big time.
I bet you that line swings about 7 points in the next 2 days.
If they even let it, man. Come on, if you're putting money on Tulane FAU, you got problems, man.
But as a true LSU fan, it would be great to see Tulane lay an egg.
Oh yeah, let them end up six and six on the year, just barely eke into that New Orleans Bowl.
Yeah, I had to explain it to a couple of friends. My hatred for Tulane. It's you know, Joe and Chase. I don't know. They haven't really been LSU fans their entire lives. Like they wasn't raised into it like I was. They kind of just became LSU fans. You know, as they progressed and gotten older. But when you know, I was going to games as I was, you know, a young little kid, and I think Billy, you were too. It was kind of, you know, entrenched in me. You know, you do not like Tulane. I don't care how bad they are, how much, you know, people feel sorry for them because they're like, you know, they're not really on our level anymore. But when I was growing up, they still kind of were at that point. Well, they was kind of fading away at that point. But in the 70s and to my parents in the 60s and 70s, that Tulane game was, you know, sometimes a tough game. You know, it stopped being that. I'd never seen LSU lose to Tulane. I was, you know, I was alive the last time they did, which I think was 82 or 83, but I don't remember watching that game. I mean, every game I've ever watched was, you know, LSU beating the crap out of them, minus, you know, a couple of close games here and there. I mean, one of the most competitive games you ever saw when LSU was good was 87, when Mack Brown was the coach. Yeah.
They put LSU on the road for like a quarter and a half in 07 or something like that.
But that was, you know, that was the game in the dome, like the purple jersey, white helmet game, 08?
Yeah.
Yes.
07, not 08.
87, that Mack Brown was the coach, and Harvey Williams tore his ACL right as he broke the 1,000-yard mark for the season. I remember that. Don't ask me why. I just remember a lot of stuff. Puck, was it you I was talking to about the fight in the 84 game in Tiger Stadium?
I think you may have mentioned that at one point. You have a few stories that you like to bring up a couple times during the tailgate.
Well, you know, I like to tell that story every year. It's a story that should be told. I just wish more people could remember that. That's something that just sticks out in my mind. Billy, do you remember that? Do you have any recollection of that or ever saw videotape or heard about that?
I've heard of it. I've never seen it. My Tulane hatred was always dulled a little bit because my longtime little league coach and, you know, name carry, you'll recognize Frank Monica. You know, he was on Tulane staff forever.
Right. Yeah.
He was such an important influence on me growing up that, you know, that always dulled it. And it gave me a new reason to hate him when they actually got rid of him when Tommy Bowden took over.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Tommy Bowden took over, it gave me a reason to hate him. But, right. I mean, now it's just kind of like, whatever. To me, I look at them the same way I look at, you know, ULL or ULM. It's just, they're just in football, they're just some team that, you know, they're lucky if we play them. And that's it. And I, you know, if they ever become more than that, you know, I reserve the right to resume hating. Yeah. I went to high school with a bunch of Tulane fans, and they were obnoxious as hell during the death throes of the DiNardo era in the late 90s when they, you know, we weren't even playing them, and they kept swearing like, oh, you're scared to play. You're scared to play. It's like, no, we just don't want to fill up your stadium for you.
Yeah. You know? The worst was the 98 season. Was the 98 season when the year with Sean King and they went undefeated? Yeah, okay, and we were 4-7 that year, or 4-8. However many regular season games we played, and I remember that. And because I've got a couple of Tulane fans back home in La Place, and you know that's, you know, many conversations we had was, you know, if we beat y'all this year, I'm like, well, guess what? You're not playing us, but you know what would happen? You know, just judging by how bad of a team we've been this year, it'd probably be a shootout, and you would probably win the last minute or so, and.
And Tulane fans are fun to mock because, you know, I know two or three people that actually went to Tulane that are Tulane fans.
Okay.
And the rest of them are people who wanted to be contrarian and like somebody else besides LSU. So they picked Tulane.
Yeah. So,
and they weren't smart enough to pick a good team. So
it still means a hell of a lot more to them than it really does to us. I mean, they still love. I mean, my one main one of my best friends on the block, huge Tulane fan, still loves to hate LSU. It doesn't matter who LSU's playing and what bowl game, he's going by that hat of the opposing team. He'll always put on his Facebook page, go whatever team LSU's playing. He just it still runs deep with him, and we still messing around back and forth with each other. But you know,
but that's my experience with Tulane fans. They don't like Tulane. Right. They just don't like LSU.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, he loves Tulane. So, and but God bless him. He pays for season tickets, and he spends a hell of a lot less than we do. So.
Oh, I knew. I know one of my best friends, God bless his soul, is probably one of the five Tulane boosters. He had football season tickets and baseball season tickets and everything.
And this is more Tulane than any New York Show subscriber should ever have listened to between us.
I'm a little disappointed in the way this episode's turned out here.
You started it, dude. You shouted out something on Twitter about LSU going playing at new stadium. You got to be smoking crack.
I'll say this is all my piece I'm going to say about this. The contract that we had says that we have to play them one more time before like 2020. Uh-huh. If I have my choice of either playing Tulane in that cold ass empty dome, because the Superdome's got air conditioning, has got one setting, and that's frigid on. So it's miserable going to games in that stadium
when there's nobody there.
You know, if I had a choice between, you know, if we have to play Tulane at Tulane again, if my choice is the Superdome or this brand new small, you know, not rusted out piece of junk old Tulane stadium, some brand new thing that they've just built, I'd much rather play it there.
It would be kind of funny to see if we can dominate the crowd in their own stadium that they have waited decades to rebuild on campus. It would be kind of funny.
Yeah, and you'd have about 50,000 LSU fans that couldn't fit into the stadium tailgating outside.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait to hear the complaints from uptown residents who are suddenly surprised that there's a university with a Division I NCAA program right next door to them.
Yeah.
that whole thing was hilarious to follow.
Oh yeah, man.
That's what they made. That's what they built Gormley away from all the residential areas. Actually, I have no idea why, but that just it made sense. All right. So anyway, let's dive through a couple of picks. I know we got some big games. We got the cocktail party. We have what's that? Miami and Florida State this weekend. Both teams still undefeated. Yep. We got a big. Is there a Pac-12 game that's going on? It's big. Is it?
There isn't any. There's a. I think. USC's got a big game, but it's on Thursday, so I didn't include it in the pick of the week. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and start at the top.
Okay, yeah, let's just run through about four or five of them.
All right, Miami and Florida State, both teams are in the top 10, both undefeated, but the spread is still 21 points for Florida State.
Wow. Where's the game at? I missed Florida State. Part. Is that Florida State?
Yeah, Duke.
Give me the Seminoles.
Yeah, give me. I'm not picking against James Winston until he gives me a reason to.
Right.
Yep.
Good. Not a question. So we it's a
unanimous
on that one.
All right. Now here's the other one. The other big ranked matchup of the weekend. Anyway, Michigan at Michigan State. Michigan is 6-1, ranked 21. Michigan State is very quietly 7-1, ranked 22nd, and at this point might be the best competition that Ohio State has for the Big Ten championship.
Possible.
It's at Michigan State. Michigan State is favored by 4.
Is Michigan State the leaders of the leaders division or the leaders of the legends division? Or neither?
They're the leaders of the Big Ten Northwest. I have no idea who is in what division, man.
Okay. Big Ten Northwest. The B1G conference. I like Michigan State. Michigan is, they've got some wins, but they're not all that impressive. I like Michigan State.
I would go with Michigan State just because their defense is so good, and Michigan can't turn the ball over and can't. You know, it's funny to watch Michigan State because they've got an offense that you know, made some of the Croton era LSU offenses look good, and you know, they've got probably the best defense in the country.
All right. The other ranked versus ranked matchup, although I'm not sure how interested people are in it, Oklahoma State, who is 6-1 and travels to Texas Tech, who is 7-1, just losing to Oklahoma last week for their first loss of the season. It's at Texas Tech, so it's, you know, on Mars in Lubbock, and Texas Tech is a 2-point favorite.
This can go either way. This can be one of those, like we, you know, where does Texas Tech go from here? You know, they just lost. I mean, they just lost Oklahoma. That was their first loss of the season. So, you know, where are they going to go from here? Are they going to bounce back? Are they going to just go 7-5, kind of a la Mississippi State a year ago? You know, in Oklahoma State, you know, quietly just sitting around, hanging around 6-1 themselves. You know, so, you know, I kind of like, I think I like Oklahoma State in this game. So give me the damn it, I'm 40 guys to cover and win.
I agree. I think Texas Tech was kind of doing all this on smoke and mirrors a little bit, and you know, they're probably about to tail off a bit back half their schedule. And Oklahoma State's a good, you know, got a good little thing going at this point. They are what they usually are. You know, they're going to score a lot of points. They're not a great defensive team, but when they've got a bunch of seniors, they're going to put it together a little bit. And mm-hmm. you know, I think they're more consistent than Texas Tech, at least for now, anyway.
All right. Let's go to an SEC game finally, and we'll talk about the cocktail party. Florida, Georgia is the home team this year and favored by 2 points in Jacksonville. Both teams 4-3. Both teams riddled with injury. Both teams unranked.
Georgia's going to be getting some of them guys back, I think, from what I understand, what I kind of heard on the radio the other day. Florida's kind of reeling, and I think they're going to continue to reel. I like Georgia.
It's this is a tough game. I mean, you got Georgia, who's just so banged up and basically played their only really perfect game of the year against LSU.
Of course.
And then you got Florida, who can't score any points. But as many games as Georgia's won in that series as of late, I always still feel like the mojo's always in Florida's corner, and that, like, you know, they're going to get a punt return, or they're going to get a pick six or something. The fluky thing that happens in that game is going to favor Florida. But, yeah, you just can't pick against Aaron Murray against Tyler Murphy or whoever's playing quarterback for Florida now, because, I mean, if it's Tyler Murphy, it's because the guys behind him are even worse, which is a scary thought.
All righty. Let's head for the only other interesting SEC game this week, really, is also in the East. It's Tennessee at Mizzou. Mizzou coming off that, you know, that just so unbelievable missed field goal in double OT to ruin their dreams of a perfect season and national title hopes, because, you know.
The laces were in!
Oh, they were in.
They were in.
It was mind-boggling watching that game, because I don't know if either you saw the end of that game live, but
I didn't see it.
The broadcasters could. It was Tessitore and Millen, and they just were in stunned silence for like a good 15 seconds after it missed. Nobody could actually believe he missed this, you know, 5-yard chip shot of a field goal that would have just sent it into an additional overtime. It was kind of shocking. And, you know, give Spurrier credit for putting in Connor Shaw in the last, like, 10 minutes of the fourth quarter and coming back from down 17-0. I mean, that was I still haven't seen all of it, but that had to have been one of the comebacks for the ages.
Right.
Yeah, that dude's basically a gamer, playing on two knee braces.
Yeah.
That dude's a gamer.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, they host Scrappy, you know, violent, tending to injure other players, Tennessee, who is 4-4 and hoping, probably needs this game for bowl eligibility. Almost Missouri is an 11-point favorite.
This is a man. That's a tough spread. I don't know. Tennessee has shown up in some games, and then they kind of haven't. I've kind of grown a soft spot in my heart for Mizzou. I got some always the sentimental aspect of it. Always some kind of connection. Some old neighbors, from back home, the Plaza, are actually from Missouri and Mizzou fans, and they've been pretty happy this season. Just watching their Facebook post, they've been to a couple games, and I was kind of disappointed after the Ole Miss game because I had visions of a Missouri LSU SEC championship game, namely because I thought it'd be an easy win for us. Give me Mizzou. I like this game's in Rocky Top, or is it in Mizzou?
It's at Mizzou.
At Mizzou. Give me Mizzou.
Yeah, give me Mizzou too. Tennessee's just not good enough to win a game like this, and Missouri's got a good little team. I don't know that they finish undefeated, but they should probably. They still got a comfortable lead in the East for now, anyway. So
yeah, they do because they've got wins over everybody that's in contention with them. So
I'm not sure, but because the East is so messed up because there's so many. I mean, there's South Carolina has played two more games than everybody else in that division for some unscheduled reason.
Everybody else
reason.
Plays in the back. Yeah, because South Carolina plays Clemson at the end, and everybody else plays each other.
Yeah.
So they're a couple games up because they have non-conference games towards the back end of their schedule.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, but I think with a win, Missouri can lock up the East. Either that or put it out of contention for everybody but South Carolina. So we'll see about that. The rest of the SEC slate's pretty lame this weekend. Mississippi State at South Carolina, Auburn at Arkansas, and everybody else is playing a rent-a-win.
Yeah.
All right. Unless you guys want to break down Army Air Force, which is this week's tiebreaker game, I think we'll call
Not
it a
really.
Night
I'm
here.
Good. I'm good. I'll take my bye week and I'll go to Washington D.C. for the weekend and come back ready, refreshed, and talk Alabama next week. So, head into the bye week, lick our wounds a little bit. Still a lot to play for, no doubt. So, I just want the team to realize that too. And
still outside shot of Atlanta. If crazier things have happened than a 2-loss LSU team,
3-loss.
It wouldn't even take that. Basically, you just need Auburn to lose one more game, and beat Alabama if LSU can win out. I mean,
lose to Georgia.
It's not, but I wouldn't say it's impossible.
So that three-way tie factor, the highest BCS ranking, would not factor in if LSU's beating both teams, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. The BCS ranking is like the fourth tiebreaker in a three-way tiebreaker.
Okay. All right. Good enough. It would hinge on Georgia beating Auburn and Auburn coming back and beating Alabama in the Iron Bowl, which, if we did beat Bama and we went out and Georgia beat Auburn, Auburn would probably go up 14-0 on Bama, and then Bama would come back and win the game 56-21.
And we'd be all pissed watching that game on the Saturday.
We get our hopes up, and then slowly just it kind of drudge away.
Yeah.
That's what's gonna happen. I mean, and it's our own fault because we didn't beat Ole Miss. We're gonna beat Alabama just to piss me off. And we're all gonna think, I'm gonna be screaming and cursing because we should have beat Ole Miss, and we'd be freaking 8-1, or 9-1, and
we'll be heading to the Capital One Bowl in Orlando because we're like the best available SEC team. Because I don't know, somehow Auburn's gonna end up going to the Cotton Bowl or some other nonsense with the scheduling because we always get jobbed in the bowls. Or hell, we'll get picked for.
I mean, ten and two should put us in a Cotton Bowl. I mean, it's.
It should give us an outside shot at the Sugar Bowl, depending on where the SEC champ goes.
Exactly. Let's not rule out. Depending on what happens, if we finish 10-2, I mean, we're only ranked 13 in the BCS. I mean, so we're not that far out. It is. It's an outside gut shot at the Sugar Bowl. Whether we go to the SEC championship game or not. So.
Well, I guess you're right there. If it's a Bama Mizzou Sugar Bowl, the Sugar Bowl is certainly going to want LSU over Missouri.
Oh, without question. So.
Oh yeah.
Keep that in mind, Les Miles, when you listen to the show. Reiterate that to your players.
Yeah. Stop spending so much time filming Canes commercials.
These A1 appliance commercials are horrible. Locally.
I have seen some bad local ads starring LSU people lately. I don't know if you've caught Ryan Terrio and what is it, that hunting store in Denton Springs?
He's doing, oh, yeah. No, it's one in Baton Rouge, shoe on Perkins Road, Bowie Outfitters or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've always been so bad. One of my most memorable ones in college, I mean, I guess you can delete this out, but just you're talking about that. I can always remember it was a hospital, and they had Ryan Clark in it, and he's dressed up in his uniform, and he gets in the stethoscope, and he yells out to, I guess he's yelling to a nurse, Deuce, stat. It was I just remember it being so bad. But those Raising Cane ads starring the entire Miles family is nothing beats the old 10K commercials with Jim Moore, Mac Brown, and Mike Archer though.
I've got that beat. I got a YouTube to send you of Curly Hallman selling Golden Flake potato chips, my friend.
Oh yeah,
oh, I forgot about
Curly, crazy about Curly pushing them Golden Flakes. Wow.
Oh yeah, that and that and Mike Archer trying to give away a van. There are some horror to be found on YouTube these days, my friend.
Yep. All right, guys, we gotta get going.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Billy, for joining us in podcast behind the scenes. Go Show. We are signing off. We'll see you next week. Talking about a win over bye week and prepping for Alabama. Looking forward to it. CBS 7 o'clock kickoff. So and then by next week, I guess we'll know what we're doing for A&M. At that point, no, we wouldn't, because we have a bye week. No, we wouldn't know yet.
Yeah, that's we won't find out till the Monday after.
Till the week, yeah, the Monday after, the 11th. Okay. All right, well, good enough. Well, keep in touch with everybody. Keep in touch. Stay in tune with the site, and we'll catch y'all next week. For Billy, for Podcast, Carrie Munks, Go Show, Go Tigers. Okay.